From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with an episode of the police drama series The Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone and Wally Mayer. This broadcast from December 7th, 1950 on CBS. It has two titles, The Jersey Parallel, also known as Seven People Killed by the Same Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is The Lineup.
We can take this row right here.
Well, will this take long, Lieutenant?
Not too long, Mrs. Wheeler.
I have to do my shopping for the weekend.
It won't take long.
Did you catch the man?
No, we don't know. We picked up everybody in the area that has a record or looks suspicious.
Well, I hope you have got him.
Well, it would be
May
easy.
May I have your attention,
awful
please?
Awful thing to have a man like that running around loose.
You yeah. People out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. At the end of each line, when I ask for questions or identifications, call out the number. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The officers who took your name will assist you in their seat in a moment.
Oh, half a dozen or so.
Please be prompt with your questions or identifications. When the prisoners leave here, they are sent to the bathroom and dressed back into their jail clothes. It makes it quite difficult to bring them back after they leave here. The questions I ask these suspects are merely to get a natural tone of voice. So do not pay too much attention to their answers as they often lie. Bring on the line. All right. Move up to the end of the stage. Right on up to the end. Keep it moving. All right, turn and face front. Hands to your sides. Look straight ahead. You, take off your hat. Okay, number one, Leonard Foster. Disturbing the peace. State your age and where you live.
I'm 42 years old. I live at 109 West 88th Street. And you know darn well I wasn't disturbing the peace.
That's the charge, Leonard.
I was walking along, minding my own business, doing nothing. I get hauled in. For no reason, you haul me in. He ain't got a charge, so you see I'm disturbing him. What am I disturbing, I want to know?
Five arrests, two convictions.
Yeah, a long time ago, sure.
Heavy theft, possession, vagrant.
Yeah, I know what I done. I done 180 days for what I done, but I ain't done it lately.
Just answer my question.
I get held all guilty for disturbing the peace because I ain't disturbed nothing. I give the arresting officer a little trouble, sure. Because I know you got nothing on me.
Leonard.
And he tags me with a phony charge. Just because you can't pin nothing on me. And you want me down here.
All right, that's enough.
Okay, I'm down here, but I ain't done nothing.
You all through shooting off your face?
Some guy shakes a screw loose and shoots up the town, so you're hauling everybody with a record. I don't go around shooting nobody.
Number
two. Or disturbing the peace.
Shut up. Number two, Edward Clark.
Hello, Sergeant.
Where do you live, Edward?
Same place, Sergeant.
Tell the people.
215 West 110th Street.
Where do you work, Edward?
Oh, I'm between jobs.
You've still got 10 months to go on your parole.
Yeah, look, we all know why we got picked up.
Yeah, for nothing we got picked up.
I told you to shut up.
I know my rights.
All right, get him out of here.
Come on,
I want a lawyer.
Run him down to the tank and let him cool off. I'll move.
Okay, but I know my rights.
All right, Edward. What were you doing when the officer picked you up?
Walking.
Where?
No place, just walking. Nothing else to do. I didn't shoot nobody. I never even come close.
Okay, number three, state your name and where you live.
John Eggleston, 110th and Orange.
You've got quite a record, John.
Not for killing nobody.
You know about the killing?
Sure, some psycho gets wild with a gun and kills everybody in sight.
He killed seven people, wounded three.
Pretty psycho.
Number four, state your name and where you live.
Thomas Cashin, 53376.
You were picked up a long way from home.
I'm a wanderer.
What were you doing when the officer picked you up?
Window shopping.
You were picked up a block away from the shooting.
Yeah, I even heard it.
But you kept on window shopping.
None of my business. Sounded like backfires to me.
You don't know the difference between backfires and gunshots?
Me? Well, how would I know?
1938, arrested on suspicion of armed robbery. 1939, breaking and entering, served a year and a day. 1941, suspicion of murder. Same year, convicted and served 3 years for armed robbery.
Make a heck of a movie, wouldn't it?
Number five, state
None
your name
of these men are the one you're looking for, Lieutenant.
Sure, no, right? How about the rest of you?
I don't see him.
No, he's not up there.
You said you were leaving your girl.
Sergeant Greb.
Yes, Lieutenant.
No identifications. Run on the next bunch.
I'm beat.
Yeah. Well, I didn't expect an identification on any of those boys. The man we're looking for is probably doesn't even have a record.
Well, we'd better get him in a hurry. The whole town's yelling for an arrest.
He's a mental case. No doubt about that. No motive in his killing. Shoots anybody indiscriminately. Seven people. Just walk down the block and shoot them.
Have you looked at ballistics report?
Yeah. Ties in with what the witnesses said. Said it was a big gun, Luger automatic pistol.
Yeah, machine pistol. Well, what do we do?
I think he's still in that area. Look at figures that he lives somewhere around there.
Why does it figure?
Well, that gun he had was a pretty big gun. Couldn't possibly carry it in his pocket. He's not going to walk very far with it before using it. I think he walked out of his house or wherever he was staying, started down this block, first person he saw, he killed him.
Maybe he drove a car.
No, that's no good. If he had a motive, sure. If he had a reason for killing those particular people, if he planned it. But no, this was just insane, wild massacre. Was anybody he saw, anybody on the street?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, look at the first person he shot, a five-year-old boy playing on his roller skates, walked up to him and killed him. 10 people he shot like that. 7 of them dead, maybe an 8. No, I'm convinced he probably sat around in his room, this thing eating at him, made up his mind, walked out, started down the block and went crazy.
Well, if you're right, you've narrowed it down to a pretty small area, and somebody in that area must know him and be able to recognize him and tell you who he is.
Well, we've got a fairly good description from the witnesses. Nobody recognized him, but they all gave a fairly accurate description. Let's give it to the police artist. Let him draw up a picture. Where are the witnesses now?
I've got all 5 of them down looking at the mug file. Mrs. Wheeler keeps yelling she's got to do her weekend shopping.
She mentioned it to me several hundred times.
She's probably got a grouchy husband.
Yeah. Go get him, Matt. Now, if you'll all just sit down, please. This is Mr. Collins. He's going to listen to your descriptions of the killer and try to reconstruct his likeness. Mr. Case?
Yes, Lieutenant?
As nearly as you can, will you again tell us what this man looked like?
Why, certainly. He was...
Just a minute, please. Now, the rest of you, if you have anything to add, speak up. If you disagree, say so immediately. All right, Mr. Case.
He was about as tall as the sergeant.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was about...
That. You're about 6 feet, aren't you, Matt?
Close, within a quarter of an inch.
And he was thin. He was wearing a white shirt.
Just a minute.
Yes.
You said he was thin. How thin? What would you say he weighed?
Oh, I guess about 160.
Oh, thinner than that. My husband weighs 160. He was thinner than that.
Well, he could have been. I'm not a very good judge.
No, more like 150.
Mm-hmm. You all agree?
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah,
yes.
About right.
He was wearing a white shirt, Mr. Case?
Yes, a white shirt and dark pants. I don't know what color pants.
I think, brown.
He was just wearing a shirt, no coat?
Now, that's right. And in this weather, too.
Well, that makes it look more like he didn't walk too far. Shirt and brown pants, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Anything else?
I can't think of anything.
No, I can't.
The rest of you?
I can't think of it.
No.
All right, now, this is really important. How many of you got a really good look at his face? Good enough so you could give an artist a description fairly close. Raise your hands, please. Everybody but Mrs. Wheeler?
Oh, I only saw how he was dressed, Lieutenant.
All right, Mrs. Wheeler. Now, we'll start with the complexion.
Lieutenant.
Yes, Mrs.
Wheeler. As long as I can't help
you. All right, Mrs. Wheeler, you can go get your shopping done.
Well, I can't do much good here.
No, you certainly can't. Goodbye and thank you, Mrs. Wheeler.
Well, you'd think I didn't want to
Will you show her out, Matt, please?
Yeah, sure.
Now, would you say the man had a dark, medium, or light complexion, Mr. Case?
Well, I'd say it was definitely dark.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Okay, dark hair?
Yes, oh, yeah. That's right.
Was cut very short, you couldn't miss it.
Would you say he had a long head or a short round head?
We had a very thin face. The head was long. Very heavy eyebrows. Dark eyes.
Well, wait a minute. They weren't so heavy.
Heavier than yours.
Well, not
oh,
like John.
Oh, certainly heavier than heavy mine. Look, I got a good look at him,
oh,
too.
Now, for just a minute. I
wait wait a minute, will you? Please, hold it. Hold it.
A little more on the nose.
Yeah, he's right, on the bridge of the nose. Not so straight.
Yeah. Lieutenant, could I be excused for a second?
Well, sure, go ahead, Mr. King.
We've been in here over an hour, Ben.
Okay.
Squad room is crawling with reporters. We'll have to give them some action soon.
Don't you think I'd like to give them some action?
Well, now, don't get jumpy.
Ah, that's nearly it. That's pretty close to what he looked like.
I think he had more of a pointed chin. You know, it stood out more.
I don't know. That's pretty close.
You've disagreed with everything I've said.
Look, lady, I'm sorry. I just don't think his chin
you
was...
You don't think anything. You just say no.
But
it don't look like that.
No. Say what you like, lady. Get as nasty as you want. I don't think
please,
he had
now,
a...
please. Look, I know it's tough for everybody,
but... It wouldn't
but...
be so tough if this here monkey
now,
was...
Now, wait a minute, please. Wait a minute. I heard one of you say that it looked pretty much like the killer.
I said.
If the chin was more pointed.
Yes, all right, but it's close.
Yeah, it's close.
All right, then.
I hope I didn't take too long.
Well, that's all right, Miss Case. Take a look at the picture, please. You think it looks like the killer?
Yes, that's very close. Now, if you'll just change...
Mr. Case. Get the picture, Matt, and let's get out of here. Now, here it is, boys. This is as close a description as we could get on the killer. Each one of you take one and start circulating in the area. Show it to everybody. Newspapers already have these, but they won't be out for a while. Hand them up, Quine.
Right.
Come on, man.
Right. Well, where to?
We'll start at the scene and work south and north.
Hey, I just thought of something.
What?
I haven't had breakfast or lunch. I'm starved.
About the killing, huh?
That's right.
A couple of policemen were in earlier. I didn't see it.
This man. Ever been in your store before?
Well, I don't recognize him.
You sure?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I've ever seen him before.
You run the store alone?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
Want to bowl a few games?
With your head, sure.
Oh, that's very funny.
There's a bar over there, Matt. You take it. I'll talk to whoever's in charge of the alleys.
Right.
Hey, you want an alley?
No. You ever seen this guy before?
You a cop?
That's right. You ever see him?
No. He the guy that killed all those people?
Yeah.
What a terrible thing that was.
How long you been working here?
Me? I run the place. Well, I hope you catch that guy. It ain't safe with a guy like that around.
How many people you got working for you? Just the people who might have seen this man if he came in.
Well, let me see. There's Marge. She's the one over there serving the beer.
Uh-huh. Who else?
I got one waitress and two bartenders working in the bar.
The bar's being checked.
Let me see. My wife, Marge, the waitress, two bartenders, and my wife. Well, that's all that's working here outside of the Pin Boys.
Okay, let's talk to them.
Sure. Talk to my wife first if you want to. She's the one at the cash register.
Uh-huh.
When I opened the place, she took over the cash register. It's bigot. Tell me, you married?
No.
Congratulations.
Ever
Everything's 7 blocks north, everything's 6 blocks south, and it doesn't look like we're going to get a thing.
Now try this one.
What, the barbershop?
Yeah. Hey,
just have a seat, gentlemen. You're next.
We're the police. We want you to take a look at this picture.
Police? Sure, let's see.
Ever see him before?
Yeah, I think so. It looks like him. I cut his hair yesterday. If it's the guy I'm thinking of.
Who is he?
His name?
Yeah, his name.
His name? I don't know. He's only been in here 3 or 4 times. He liked his hair short, like in the picture. He done something?
Yeah, he's done something.
Funny guy. You know, he's always talking about the army, about all the battles.
He talk about where he lived?
Well, he never talked about where he lived. Just about the army and how he wanted his haircut. And how he didn't like the people in his town. What'd he do?
He killed some of the people he didn't like in this town.
He was the one? He killed all those people today?
We think so.
Holy gosh, I cut his hair.
And he didn't tell you where he lived?
He said nothing, but I know, at least I'm pretty sure.
Where?
A rooming house, block down the street. I seen him go in there once with the groceries. This side on the corner, at the end of the block.
Thanks.
How do you like that? He killed all those people. I cut his hair.
Yes?
You the landlady?
Yes, that's right. You want a room?
Police. We want to talk to you.
Oh. All right.
We'd like to come in.
All right. What's wrong?
Shh. Keep your voice down. It's about one of your rumors.
One of my rumors?
Take a look at this picture.
Oh, him. What's he done?
Who is he?
Name's Fitch, Arthur Fitch. What's he done?
Is he in?
Yeah, it's been a couple of hours ago. Still in his room, I think. What's he done?
Where's his room?
Second floor, first door.
Where's your phone?
One on the wall. Only one we got. You'll have to pay a nickel.
How many other people in the building?
It's just me. We got one vacancy. Everybody else is working.
Mm-hmm, I see.
Would you mind telling me what this is all about?
We want Arthur Fitch on suspicion of murder.
Murder?
Mr. Sergeant.
Murder?
Keep your voice down.
Hello, Captain. Mr. Sergeant Greb. Ben and I are in a boarding house on 103rd Street, 314. We think I got a man. Yeah, that's right. Name Arthur Fitch, a barber, identified him. According to the landlady, he's up in his room now. No. We'll wait for you. Right, Captain.
He'll cover the area.
Look up, that.
You'd better go outside, lady. Get off the street as quickly as possible.
But my place.
Lady, you've got a murderer upstairs. You want to stay here?
All right.
You go outside, Matt, and wait for Waldo. I'll stay here.
Oh, good Lord.
Don't move.
Don't shoot us, Arthur.
Better put it down, Arthur.
I'll kill you all if you move.
You don't have a chance, son.
I never do. Somebody's always trying to hurt me. I never have a chance. I said don't move.
Ooh.
All right, Arthur.
You think you're smart, don't you? You think you're pretty smart. I heard you talking on the phone. I heard you when you came in. I saw you coming down the block. I knew you'd get here sooner or later. Just haven't made up my mind what to do yet. Just haven't made up my mind. I feel so bad. Everybody makes me feel so bad.
We don't want to hurt you, Arthur.
You don't. You're lying.
We just want to talk to you.
Want to talk to me, huh? You want to talk to me, then you want to go out and tell people things about me. You want to make people talk about me. You want to make them hate me.
We want to show you how to get out of here, Arthur. Show you what to do. Help you make up your mind.
You're lying.
We just thought we could help you, Arthur.
You want to help me?
That's right.
How? How can you help me? Nobody around here wants to help me. Not since I got here. Nobody likes me. Just like that other town. Everybody's saying things about me, planning things. How can we get Arthur out of town? Arthur's no good. Let's run him out. I showed him.
We'll hide you, Arthur.
I don't believe you. I don't know you.
Well, sure you do. We've helped you before.
You have?
Sure. We don't want you to get hurt.
We'll hide you so you can't get hurt.
You've helped me before?
Sure. Don't you remember?
No.
Oh, we've helped you lots of times.
The policeman. You call the police.
Ah, we just said that.
Yeah, so we could fool them. Get you out.
You've helped me before?
That's right, Arthur. We'll help you this time, too.
When did you help me before?
Lots of times when you were in trouble. Remember all the times you were in trouble?
And how you got out of them, Arthur? How you got out of trouble? We helped you. You haven't forgotten us, have you, Arthur?
Will you get me out of this trouble?
Sure, we'll show you the way.
Yeah. Yeah, please. Please help me.
Come down the stairs.
All right.
Now, you've got to hurry.
You're going to help me?
Sure, like we helped you in the Army. All the times you got in trouble.
You were in the Army?
Sure, we were in the Army.
What's that?
Well, it isn't anything, Arthur. Come on now.
No, no. No, Mrs. Evans, come up here.
You better do it.
Hurry up or I'll shoot the whole bunch of you.
Yes,
we'll go to my room so I can think. They won't hurt me, but I got you.
Where is he, Lieutenant?
He's got the landlady upstairs in his room. He's got the machine pistol, too.
Whole area is surrounded.
He's a complete paranoid. Really came apart at the seams. Thinks everybody hates him.
What do we do?
Well, he's killed 7 people already. We can't take a chance on that poor landlady.
We almost had him. Just another second, and we just about had him talked into thinking we were his only friends. I doubt if he'll trust anybody now.
Come on, let's get outside.
Oh, here comes Captain.
Now, wave him back. The more cops Arthur spots, the more desperate he'll get.
Well, we just can't let him sit up there. There's no telling
what... I got an idea, Matt. Stay close to the building. According to the landlady, that's his room right above us.
No way to get up there.
Now, there's a building across the street. If we can get into the second floor... Quine, go get a rifle.
Can you spot him?
No. I can see right into his room, but I can't see Arthur or the landlady.
Probably sitting down.
If he'd only get in front of that window.
Yeah, we can't wait. No telling when he's liable to start using that gun.
Then we're no better off than when we started.
We are if somebody can get him in front of that window.
Well, how's that going to be done?
Well, I'll worry about that after I see whether I can talk my way into his room.
Ben.
Can you think of a better way?
No, but how about me trying it?
You're a better shot than I am.
Okay.
I hope you're a better shot. Remember, if I do get him in that window... I'm the fat one. Arthur. Arthur. Your friend, Arthur.
Why don't you go away?
I still want to help you.
Why do you lie like that? Why don't you admit it? You want to kill me.
You've got to trust me, Arthur. I know a way to get you out.
Now listen. Listen, you better leave. I've got Mrs. Evans in here, and I'll shoot her if anybody tries to get me out of here.
Please go away.
Then just look out the window, Arthur. You can see the way to get out yourself.
I don't want to look out the window. Go away, I'm warning you.
Then just let me talk to you. I can't hurt you by just talking to you.
I don't want to hear anything you got to say. I feel bad.
Oh, you. Arthur, if I can prove I'm your friend, if I can prove I've helped you before, will you trust me?
You can't prove that.
Well, let me talk to you. I'll prove it.
It's getting late. It's getting late. I've got to make up my mind what to do.
Arthur.
How can you prove that you want to help me?
If I can prove that I helped you other times, will you believe me?
I won't say.
If I can prove I helped you in the Army. If I can prove I was in the Army with you.
Go ahead.
Well, let me in. I can't talk out here. Somebody might hear us.
Put your hands up over your head. I've got this gun and I'm going to open the door. Mrs. Evans will be in front of me. Get in front of me, Mrs. Evans.
All right. All right.
Have you got your hands up?
Yes, Arthur?
All right. Come in.
Okay.
Stand over there.
All right.
Sit on the floor. You too, Mrs. Evans. I may not let you leave now. I may keep you here, too.
You said you'd let me help you.
I might have just wanted to get you into the room. They won't touch me now.
You said if I could prove I was in the Army with you, you'd let me help you.
Were you in the Army?
With you, Arthur.
In the war?
Yeah, that's right.
Infantry?
Just like you.
Yeah. I was in the Army for 5 years. 7 battles.
Were you with me then?
That's right. I helped you all those times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, terrible times. I was decorated.
Yeah. You did a wonderful job.
Yeah. I got the Purple Heart. I was wounded.
Well, I know. Don't you remember in the hospital? I helped you.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody else was with you. Another man. You both helped me.
That's right.
Oh, you don't know what it's like in war, Mrs. Evans. He'll tell you. All that killing. Have to kill him or get killed yourself.
I can help you out of this, Arthur. Just like those terrible times in the war.
How?
Just look out of the window.
Out of the window?
Yeah. I got a car down there. On the street. Right below the window.
I don't know.
Oh, they'll never get you.
I don't know.
Well, you've got a gun.
Yeah.
Well, look out the window. Look at the car.
You'll come with me?
Sure. Sure. I'll help you.
Why do people always have to hate me?
We'll climb out of that window, get in that car.
I made them all sorry for not liking me.
Well, you see the car?
No. No, I don't.
It's all right, Mrs. Evans. It's all right.
I didn't see the car.
There wasn't any car, Arthur.
I gotta tell you something.
Go ahead.
I feel terrible about something. I gotta tell you.
All right, Arthur.
I'm really ashamed. But I never really was in the army. I just made it up.
The lineup, where before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again next week when we again bring you The Lineup.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the president.
The Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Ben Guthrie and Wally Mayer as Sergeant Matt Greb, is written by Blake Edwards with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were Lee Patrick, Elliot Reed, Wilms Herbert, Howard McNear, Sidney Miller, Clayton Post, Joe Duvall, and Virginia Gregg. The Lineup is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle.
An episode of The Lineup, as originally broadcast December 7th, 1950. It is the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, the best way to do that is by email. It's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. We'll remain in the year 1950 for our final offering this hour, as we go back to April 11th of that year, for an episode of one of the earliest science fiction series on radio, Beyond Tomorrow. This was the second episode in the series. It's entitled Incident at Switchpath.
Now for tonight's story, let's go Beyond Tomorrow. Are you afraid to face tomorrow, or whatever may lie beyond tomorrow? Do you think you're up to spending a weekend on the moon, or entertaining house guests from Mars? Can you and your children adjust to the strange, new, wonderful world that is being wrought in the test tubes and cyclotrons of science beyond tomorrow? Beyond Tomorrow, a new program of probabilities, drawn from the vast library of science fiction, where anything is possible, then possibly may happen to you. Tonight, based on a famous story by Theodore Sturgeon and adapted by Draper Lewis, a tale about a man accused of murder in a small western town who insists it was not murder, but something really much worse.
Presiding coroner here, and I'll handle this inquest my way, if you don't mind.
All right.
Now, look, Kemp, why can't you get it through your head that nobody's trying to railroad you into admitting anything? You're just a fella knows something about the death of this here Alessandro Sykes. And this court would like to know exactly what happened.
I'll tell you what happened. That kid killed Sykes. Killed him dead in the doornail, and then brought the body back here and dumped it in his hotel room. That's what happened.
No, you're wrong. I didn't kill him. You're trying to accuse me of murder, but I tell you, it's something worse. Something much, much worse than murder.
If we don't have any quiet in this courtroom, I'm going to have the sheriff clear the place. This inquest is going to be run legal-like or ain't going to be run at all.
You mean maybe we should have the hanging right now, Bert?
I didn't say no such thing.
Well, maybe you should and stop wasting so much time.
Well, that's fine. Mr. Wilson, sir, you can't let him hang me. I'm innocent, I tell you. I didn't kill Sykes. Aren't you even going to listen to what I got to say?
Sure, son, I'm going to listen. We're all going to listen. Or I'm taking this boy into Tucson where there's a jury that will listen.
Well, this better be good. We don't like murder around Switchback.
Darn, we don't like strangers neither. If you gentlemen are through now, suppose we hear what the boy has to say.
I don't know.
All right, son. Now let's get the facts straight first off. Your full name?
James Gordon Kemp.
And your home?
Chicago, Illinois.
City bred, huh? Maybe that's why he don't give no mind to something like murder.
I thought you was always so proud about the times you've been to Tucson, Haverty.
Huh?
Seems to me wearing silk shirts is pretty city bad, too. All right. Here, son, sit down.
Thank you.
Now, suppose you tell us what happened. Tell us the whole story just like it happened.
Okay. I'll try. I guess I'd better go right back to the beginning. The first time I ever saw this here Sykes. It must have been about 2 months ago. I had a little repair shop at the time, just auto parts and maybe fooling around with radios and TV sets now and then. It didn't make no big profit, but it paid the rent and gave me a little extra pocket money. I was working in my shop one afternoon when he walked in. He watched what I was doing a couple of minutes. Then he spoke up.
You Gordon Kemp?
I said yes and looked him over. He was a scrawny fella, probably 60 years old, and wound up real tight. He talked fast, smoked fast, moved fast. As if there wasn't time for anything, but he had to get on to something else. I asked him what he wanted.
You the man had that article in the magazine about a concentrated atomic torch?
Yeah. Only that guy from the magazine used a lot of loose talk. He says my torch is 300 years ahead of its time. Actually, it's something I stumbled on by accident, more or less. It's an ordinary atomic hydrogen torch, but it's plenty hot. It'll cut anything. Anything. And since it got patented, you'd be surprised at the calls I got. You got no idea how many people want to cut into bank vaults and the side doors of hock shops.
I'd like to take a few weeks off and go out west. Arizona? I want you to cut your way into a cave there.
A cave? Is it legal?
Sure it's legal.
How legal?
You'll get me into that place. You can satisfy yourself as to whether it's legal. I'll give you $5,000.
What?
Cash.
How's that again?
Get me into that cave, and you'll get $5,000. Cash.
come you happen to run across this here cave, Professor Sykes? Didn't anyone else in Switch Path ever spot it?
From what I can gather, there must have been a shifting of rock. Maybe a slight earth tremor that opened it up. The time I was fresh out of college, spending all my time digging for Indian ruins, I found it at the bottom of a deep cleft. Small, dark room, all rock walls. It was rock that was very old. A couple of 100,000 years. Maybe 500,000.
Half million?
It wasn't the rock that got me so excited. It wasn't the rock and it wasn't the cave. It was the machinery in the cave.
What?
Machinery that must have been put there before there were any human beings on Earth.
Oh, not just a minute, Professor.
Now, look. You don't care whether you believe me or not. I know what I'm talking about. Those machines were installed in that cave room back when there wasn't a single living creature of any sort.
But that doesn't make sense. If there are machines, then some human beings must have made them. Some human beings must have hauled them into the cave and assembled them. Only you say there weren't any human beings on Earth.
Maybe not on Earth, Kemp. But there are human beings someplace else. At least, beings. Who knows whether they're human or not?
Wow. That's a nice, pleasant thought.
Yes. I thought so, too, at the time. I've gotten used to it now. I got used to it during all the days and nights I stayed in that room and studied that machinery.
What kind of machinery was it?
Well, I finally figured out that one of them was some sort of a radio transmitter. Now, get this. Here's a machine with an antenna on top of it, just like a microwave job. Beside it is another machine. The second machine is shaped like a dumbbell standing on one end. Top of it is sort of a covered hopper. At the waist of the machine are two big spools with a wire running between them made out of some alloy that was never seen before on this earth.
Were they running?
One was running, making a slight humming sound. The dumbbell machine was running, and that's what gave me a clue to what it was. That machine is a recorder. And that automatically makes the other machine a transmitter.
A recorder? What kind of a recorder?
It records the physical being of the entire earth. Every earthquake, every continental shift, weather cycles, every hurricane and volcano eruption and landslide. Now here, take a look at this.
A piece of wire, huh? About 35 gauge. Money tough.
Yes. I cut it off the recording machine. Kemp, my boy, it took a long time, a lot of years out of my life. I finally got it decoded. I can read that wire. You've no idea in what detail that piece of wire records, second by second, minute by minute, day by day, through the years, through the centuries. When I start my decoding, I'll be able to prove things which until now have only been guessed, only whispered about in the history books of the world. I'll be able to give the exact time and date when the Red Sea parted for the fleeing Israelites. You want to know what happened to the Spanish Armada? I have it all here. What about the last days of Pompeii? I have it, son. I have it. And I am going to give it to the world. Me, Alessandro Sykes. Give it to humanity complete and provable, and history will be reckoned from the day I speak.
I admit he did sound a little off his rocker. And if I had any sense, I would have gotten off that train and gone back to Chicago. But he was such a nice little guy. As nice a little character as you'd ever want to meet. And he figured he had something big in that cave.
Yes,
I tell you, something important enough that he'd been living with it, thinking about it, working on it day in and day out for 30 years or more. You can't let that kind of a guy down.
All of us here knew Sykes pretty well, Kemp. His family was among the first settlers in Switchpath. Came in on a wagon train just before the rush in 49. We knew he spent a lot of time digging around in the desert, but we never heard about no cave.
It's 30 miles or so to the east of town. You pass a big rock formation. It's shaped like a crescent.
And the cave's a little further
up. I've been out by Crescent Rock more times than I can count, and I never seen no cave.
But you wouldn't see it if you didn't climb into the cleft.
Something happened out there just about 2 years ago. Ground was hot for miles around. All the grass shriveled up and died. Nothing's grown there since.
Yeah, besides, if Sykes had found a cave, he certainly would have told somebody here in town. Ain't like he was an outsider, if you know what I mean.
Well, sure.
That cave was there. It's not there now, but it was there, and I was in it. Sykes didn't tell anyone else about it because he knew no one would believe him. He wanted to get his proof first.
And what makes you think we believe you, Kemp?
This is the truth I'm telling you. This is how it happened.
And you still haven't told us about the killing yet.
No, how about that?
I said this inquest was going to be run legal, boys.
Hey, we're wasting a lot of time. The whole story smells to high heaven, and you know it.
I ain't passing judgment one way or the other till I hear what the boy has to say. And I still mean what I said about having the court clear. All right. Now, go on, Kemp. What happened when you got here to Switchpath with Sykes?
I don't think anyone will remember the night we arrived. I was dead tired from the trip, and I wanted to get some sleep. But the professor was all for getting out of town as quick as possible. He didn't want to answer any questions. So we piled all the stuff into his rattly old car and started for Crescent Rock. It was plenty spooky driving across the desert at night. It was a cold wind. It kicked up the dust and you breathed dust. Bit into it. The old man kept peering straight ahead. And every now and then he'd change the direction.
Swing a little to the right, son. It's an old castle trail. We follow it for 5 miles or so.
He knew the way perfect.
It's Crescent Rock way up there ahead. Just keep it head on.
We didn't detour or backtrack once.
It's another 10 miles now. Distance is pretty tricky out here. Things look closer than they really are.
And then, just as it began to get near dawn, the sky was all smoky and you could start seeing the scrub weeds and cactus growing around the trail. Sykes grabbed my arm and said...
Well, pull up here, son. Walk the rest of the way to the cave. I don't want anybody snooping around while we're down there with those machines. I don't want anyone to know a thing until I'm ready to tell them. Just about 100 feet or so... Be at the entrance to the room, son.
Oh. Boy, I never knew how much this torch weighed till I had it strapped on my back.
Sure, I can't give you a hand with it.
No, it's okay, Professor. Don't worry.
Over there, that's all that's left of the place where I used to camp at night. I was afraid to sleep in the room, afraid to sleep outside the cleft. I used to make a fire and bed down on the rock.
Can't say I'd enjoy that over a long period of time.
You can get used to anything if it's important enough. I got used to the dark, the sound of little animals scurrying around, the damp, the smell. Wait.
Huh?
This is it, Kemp. You can take off your pack, yeah?
There. Oh, that feels better. Oh, I'm glad I can still straighten up.
You see that place there? Between the two pillar formations. That's it, son. And it's all yours. If that 300 years in the future torch of yours is any good, now's the time to prove it.
And now, back to our story.
Okay. Now stand clear of the equipment, Professor. Sure that tank is balanced squarely?
Then pile a few more rocks around it.
Yeah, well, we'll give it a try this way. If it starts to move, just give a shout.
I'll watch it, Kemp.
Well, here we go.
How long do you think it'll take, Kemp?
I don't know.
It depends on how thick the rock is that's sealing up this room.
James, think of it. On this little piece of wire, I have a complete record of the movement of the polar glacier, which will have all the learned busybodies gnashing their teeth. Have I said anything? Not me. Not Sykes? I'll wait till I can get the whole spool of wire, and I'll translate it into a history of the earth and mankind written in such detail, with such detail, with such authority, that the name of Sykes will go into the language as a synonym of the miraculously accurate. Me, Alessandro Sykes.
Hand me those black goggles, huh? How long have we been at it now, Professor?
Almost 3 hours, son. You better let me spare you.
No, I'll take a breather when I need one. This torch is too heavy for you to handle. By the way, whatever happened to the answers you used before? How can we have to burn our way in like this?
That, my boy, is an unforeseen quality of the machines. For some reason, they closed themselves up. In a way, I'm glad they did. I was unable to get back in. I was forced to concentrate on my sample. If it hadn't been for that, I doubt I would ever have cracked the code. Whoever left these machines here, or how they operate, we may never know. It would be interesting to find out. The important thing now is to get into that room and get that spool of wire. That's all that matters, son. That's all that matters.
Six hours and only 7.5 inches. I've seen that torch of mine walk in a laminated bank vaults like the door was open. What kind of rock is this, anyhow?
It must have been some chemical substance added that we don't know about when the room was sealed.
And you think that machine will still be running after the blast of heat it must have took to build this wall?
It'll be running. They'll both be running. The recorder and the transmitter.
What do you mean? The transmitter?
Because the recorder was set to trip it off. I found that out, too. There's a little gear train waiting by the wire, and when something happened, somewhere on Earth that was just the right thing, Crimp would show in the wire, which would hit the gear train and start up the transmitter.
Yes, but you said...
I saw a crimp in the wire. Something happened which put a wiggle in it, the thing I was looking for all along. I was in the cave the day it happened. There was a sharp click. The transmitter started up and the wire kept on recording. I looked in the papers the next week to see what it was. I couldn't find a thing. It wasn't until the following August that I found out.
What? What was the date when it started to transmit?
July 16, 1945.
July 16th?
The day the first atom bomb was exploded at Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Okay. Okay, Professor. Hold the light a little higher. This should do it now. I'll have to wait a minute or so while those edges cool.
30 years' work. 30 years, Kemp.
Professor, who do you think's on the receiving end of that transmitter?
I don't know. I'm only sure whoever he is or they are, they're not any place on this earth. That's why I've been so anxious to get into the room.
Well, we'll throw that canvas over the edges. Just safe. Now, you take the big flashlight. I'll bring the lamp.
We can remove the spool of wire and then destroy the machines. It won't be any good to anyone else once the recording device is disconnected. The light, Kemp. Bring in the light quickly.
Yeah,
quickly.
Yeah, I'm right behind you, Professor.
Oh, brother. You aren't kidding about that machinery, Worth.
They're beautiful, aren't they, Kemp?
I've never seen anything that looks like that transmitter.
And the recorder, Kemp. Come closer. Examine the recorder. Listen to it humming, Kemp. I knew it would be humming. It's recording everything that's happening to the Earth, the whole Earth. Will we stand here and listen to it humming?
Professor, maybe we better get the wire and get out of here. This place gives me the willies.
Don't be frightened, son. Machines can't hurt you.
It's not the machines. I just don't like this place. Let me hold a flashlight and you disconnect the spool.
There should be a catch lever of some sort which frees it. Something like a movie camera, one of those old-fashioned wire recorders.
Yeah, well, maybe I can find it, Professor. I've worked with these things.
No, I know. No, I can find it. Just let me alone. You forget that I've been... Oh, Kemp.
What's the matter, Professor?
Kemp, the reel is empty. Look. It's only 8 inches of wire on it. Only 8 inches, Kemp. It was almost full before the Kemp was seen.
But that's impossible. No one could get through that rock. No one, I tell you.
The reel's been refilled. That's what's happened. It's been refilled. Kemp, they've been here.
Who's been here, Professor?
That's what the transmitter was for, Kemp. Tell them when the first atomic power was used on Earth. The recorder tripped the transmitter. It sent out a signal. They answered it and came here and changed the reel. It's the beginning of a new era, as far as they're concerned.
Sykes. Sykes. Who are you talking about? Who are they? What do you mean?
I don't know. I don't know, but they've been here. And I've lost 30 years' work. 30 years of my life completely gone and disappeared.
Professor, you gotta put yourself together. We gotta get out of here. I don't like this at all.
Get out? Why get out? Damage has been done now. The reel's gone.
I don't like the way that thing hums. Sounds like it's just sitting there, waiting and... Crimp. It hit another crimp in the wire. The transmitter started again.
Doesn't matter now. Nothing matters now. Nothing. Nothing.
You want to grab that light? I've had enough of this.
No. No. I'm going to stay here.
You're not staying in this cave. You're coming with me if I have to carry you.
No, let me alone.
What?
I'm staying here, Kemp. Kemp, let go of me.
No. No.
Let go.
Professor, watch out for that recorder.
Professor.
Sykes, are you all right?
My hands. Burn my hands. It's so hot.
Yes. Both hands, sir. They're getting hotter every second. Come on. We gotta move. Somebody tells me this place is gonna blow sky high.
My hands.
Put your arm across my shoulder. I'll guide you out through the cleft.
Your school. 30 years' work.
Stop talking and walk, Professor. We're getting out of here in fast.
I don't remember much about that climb up through the cleft, dragging Sykes with me every inch of the way. I just knew it was hot. I could hear rock falling and rock bubbling thick and heavy behind me, down there in that terrible room. I somehow got to the car and stretched Sykes out of the back seat. I asked him how he was, but he didn't answer me. He just kept looking back towards the cleft and the glow of the lava. And then he whispered.
They knew we'd reached the atomic age. They wanted to be told when. That's what the transmitter did. They came and took the recordings, filled the machine.
Don't try to talk, Professor. I'm going to drive you into town and we'll get the doctor to take care of those hands of yours.
They sealed off the room with something they thought only controlled atomic power could break into. This time the recorder was triggered to that power. Your torch did it, Kemp. That 300 years in the future torch, that did it. They think we have atomic power. They'll come back, Kemp.
Who, Professor? Who?
I don't know. I don't know whether they're friends or enemies or where they are. There'd be only one reason why someone, some creature, would want to know a thing like that. That's so they could stop us.
Oh, no, no, Professor. We're not going to be stopped now. Like the papers say, we're in the atomic age if it kills us. Mm-hmm. But we're in for keeps. Why, humanity would have to be killed off before to get out of this atomic age.
I know that, Kemp. I know. That's what I mean. Kemp. Kemp, what have we done? What have we done?
Professor? Professor Sykes? I was going to bury him there, out there near the cleft. I thought he'd like to be there. But then I realized that people would be wondering about him, looking for him. So I brought him in. In the excitement, I left town. It just didn't look good to me. I knew nobody would listen to a yarn like that.
Well, now I can see what Brother Kemp was worried about. That story is true. I, for one, would think twice about telling him.
He's a liar. He's a murdered liar.
I caught a kid that reads that kind of stuff, and I never did like to see him at it. Believe me, he's going to cut it out as of right now.
I think this Kemp guy needs a hanger.
Wait a minute, man. If we kill off this fellow, we do it legal, see? You just keep quiet a while longer, and let me ask this boy a question. Now, look, Kemp. If there's anything in your story, or in that goofy idea the dead man's about someone coming to kill us off, well, ain't it about time they did?
Yeah! When's the invasion start, kid?
Yeah, maybe we should start digging foxholes now, huh, Kemp?
I didn't say anything about that. I just told you the facts the way they happened. I just told you what Sykes told me.
The whole thing's a lousy pack of lies. It's all lies. Lies!
Wilson! Wilson! That was a bomb!
Ned Wilson, look! There!
In the sky! Look!
Ships! Ships!
The sky is full of ships!
Classic Sci-Fi from Beyond Tomorrow. Incident at Switch Path from April 11th, 1950. That wraps it up for this hour of the program. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for joining me. I hope you can tune in again soon for another hour of sounds from radio's golden era. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.